guys down at the computer. Yeah. And that's it. Just make sure everybody's moving. Run that like that.
Lynn? Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming. This is quite a surprise. We've got a full house here for our first committee meeting, and I'm very pleasantly surprised to see all of you here. Mary, why don't we begin by taking roll call? This is for the Economic Development, Tourism, Housing, Planning, and Transit Committee.
Legislator Archer?
Here.
Legislator DeLon?
Here.
Legislator Mayo? Legislator Maloney James? Legislator Maloney Joseph?
Here.
Legislator Waltman?
Here.
Chairman Rodriguez?
Present. All right. So we will, the chair this time will entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes for December 4th, 2018.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Waltman. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Legislator Archer. There are no amendments, no additions, subtractions. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion carries. All right, we have resolutions for our February 19th regular legislative session. At this time, I am going to take Resolution 56 out of order. We'll do that one first, which is authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Transportation to accept New York State funds for the Ulster and Dutchess County Public Transit Service Link, Department of Public Transportation, Ulster County Area Transit. Moved by Legislator Archer. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Waltman. Carol, do you want to just talk 5 seconds? The Link Bus?
Yeah, the Link Bus, I think everybody knows it, rides from Rosendale over to the Poughkeepsie train station. It also leaves out of the Kingston Plaza now. We've added that run, which is very successful, and is heading to the train station. So it's been a very good thing for Ulster County.
It's also important to note that it also doesn't cost us anything.
Exactly.
as MTA picks up the local share.
Yep.
For this particular program.
Yep, $280,000 is federal share and $80,000 is state share.
Yep.
Zero share for local.
Yep, and actually as a result of this program, we actually ended up lowering all fees for buses so I actually ended up benefiting three times over for the residents of Ulster County. So on that note, it's been moved, it's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, carries. Resolution 31, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into the County SUNY New Paltz Student Association Ulster County Area Transit. Carol?
All right, what the Link Bus does, it loops around the city of New Paltz, the village of New Paltz, sorry. And that also, the students are subsidized through the village and the SUNY New Paltz College. It's very successful. Also, the students ride free. That bus, the veterans also ride free. And another good thing for Ulster County.
And seniors ride free.
And seniors ride free. That's right.
Sorry. It should also be noted, this is the first instance where we actually had localized service, and it took three partners to make it happen. In this case, the Student Association, the Town of New Paltz, and the County of Ulster. So it's been moved and seconded by... Was it moved and seconded? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was moved by... We'll move... Mr. DeLon and Legislator Archer have moved and seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 32, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Trapeze Software Group, Department of Information Services, and UCAP.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Leo.
So Trapeze, TripSpark, it's the DRM Flex and DriverMate software supporting UCAP scheduling, routing, the application that's located on the buses, on the tablets, gives them visibility where they're going, when.
I will always ask my generic question, which is, when was the last time that this was bid out?
Right. So the original contract was back in 2010.
Yeah.
This is the Fourth Amendment, so we've looked at other opportunities, and they're just for the size of our county and for the bus system that we have, this works the best.
And Carol, you're still happy with the product?
Yeah, it's very good for capturing the data that we need for our NGD and our federal reporting, and we have upgraded from the NDTs to the tablets.
Right.
in the past 12 months.
And for anybody who forgets, you know, Carol's one of these wonderful examples of working her way up through the county, and so hence you actually had to deal with this when the software was purchased back in 2010. So if anybody knows it, it's you. So, yeah. Okay.
It's
great.
Great software.
Okay. All right. That said, is there a motion? Moved by Legislator Waltman. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Maloney. Any other questions? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
No problem. All right. Resolution 33, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Martinelli Holdings, LLC, DBA Today Media, Department of Tourism. Rick, how are you?
Good, Mr. Chairman. How are you?
It's wonderful to see you, Mr. Remsnyder. So why don't you share with us a little bit about, by the way, thank you guys for coming. Why don't you sort of walk us through this?
This is our travel guide, which is one of our main marketing tools that we do every year. 120,000 travel guides are printed and distributed. I'm very happy to announce that we just this past week received a Service Industry Advertising Award, Gold Award, for our travel guide. It's the 8th year in a row that we've received an award from this very prestigious group of advertising agencies, marketing experts throughout the country. We were the only travel guide in the United States to be honored with that Gold Award, so it kind of validates what I think we're doing. And just for your information, travel guide requests through mail and up over 4,000 this past year. So half of those were domestic and half of those were international. So I think we had a very good product last year and hoping to better it this year. I'll be happy to try to answer any questions.
All right. I will let the committee go first. But any questions for Mr. Remsnyder with regards to this particular resolution? All right. Actually, I guess I'm being reminded the resolution has not been moved. So at this time, the chair will entertain a motion to move by Legislator Archer. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Maloney. Now that we've gone through that formality, I know that the chair, she wanted me to sort of convey a question with the guard. So I guess to a certain degree, there may not be firm timelines, I guess, within this particular contract. So I guess part of my question is, when are these things going to print? This is, I'm assuming this is an annual product that we produce every single year.
Right.
Am I correct? I'm making sure that I'm...
You look at Schedule A, the amendment, it details about 20 steps for going through the steps of the travel guide.
Well,
and
I mean, 16 goes and says, you know, firm shall deliver the travel guides no later than May 9th. But I guess, I mean, so we're going to, number one, that is the timeline, right? That is, and they've met it previously, correct?
Yes, they have.
So maybe...
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. Maybe the source of confusion is in Schedule A, number 3, the dates are for 2018. So those should probably be updated to 2019.
Must have got, I'm sorry about that.
No, that was one of them, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
The question.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's all nice.
Just move it to 2019,
yes.
And it's the same schedule.
Yeah.
Well, but are we sure about the dates, though? Meaning, like, do they all match up? Oh. Meaning, suddenly is, and I don't remember this, but...
a weekend or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Does you know, does the 28th, is that suddenly a, you know, is that suddenly a Saturday, right?
I can forward you over the correct schedule. I don't know how that got in.
How that happened? Okay. All right. Are there any other questions for Mr. Remsnyder? Don't worry, you'll have this in Ways and Means as well, so you'll have to come back. Mrs. DeLon.
But is this an Ulster County company?
No, it's not. It's city. We had a RFP last
year. Poughkeepsie?
And, they're out of Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, I was going to say, Martinelli, I thought, is in Poughkeepsie. Family used to be in Yonkers, right, before that, but then they're in Poughkeepsie.
Correct.
So, yeah.
They do Hudson Valley Magazine. They do Westchester Magazine. We, in the past, we've used Luminary Media a number of times to, from Kingston to our travel guide. We had an RFP committee that came, and I believe it was four firms came to the meeting, and this Today Media presented the best plan, in our opinion. So they did a great job this past year. Mm-hmm. As you can tell by the reports, it's fantastic.
Well, I'm glad to hear it's at least Hudson Valley.
Yes.
Let's play to Archer.
And these get distributed, I see 120,000 copies, and they're distributed half here, domestic, and half international. Is that what you meant?
No, that was, that would be 60,000 going international.
Well, that's why I'm trying to...
No, most of what I was saying that is part of the increase, some of those were international. But the vast majority are distributed in New York State Thruway. We have three thruway stops in New York. We also distributed them up and down Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Ulster County, the 10 counties surrounding Ulster. So most of them are locally distributed, going to our target audience, which is south of here.
And so the tour guy, the tour kiosks in the thruway, that's where they're going?
Yes, we have a contract with Destinations New York out of Sarbanes. And they do a fantastic job of putting out our travel guides and a lot of our other dining guides, guides and things of that nature. So we, that's really a big part of our distribution, people coming up from the city and traveling. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Waltman.
Yeah, are any of these distributed digitally?
It's on our website. Yeah, people can go on our OlsterCountyLive.com see our website. We have a flip book there.
Right.
If they like, they can also print it off our website.
And the copyrights, or there's no copyright issues with that? Or?
No.
Okay.
No.
Mr. Maloney.
You said 120,000 copies this year. Has that changed over the last two or three years? Has it been pretty consistent?
It's been pretty consistent. One year, we seem to have a run, and we printed an extra 20,000 to get up to 40,000. That was 2 years ago. We did a lot of different shows, so they seem to move. But throughout the 12 years that I've been doing it, we've always printed 120,000.
Now, this came up last year, I remember, with regards to, you know, sort of who makes the cut, who doesn't. I guess part of my question is, you know, what's the process, I guess, by which you sort of, like, rotate, you know, sort of, you know, who gets, you know, but not just who gets in, who doesn't, but also how we sort of advertise, right? You know, how do we sort of, you know, do you, year by year, either working with Cubic or working with, you know, within the department, sort of figure out what sort of, you know, what you're highlighting that particular year?
Right, yes.
What's the process a little?
Well,
a little,
first of all, yeah. We have over 800 listings, mm-hmm. and they're in every year. Nobody mm-hmm. gets cut out. So I'm assuming you're talking about how the content is featured.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I apologize. Thank you.
Yeah, it depends. We have different Today Media might do it a little more of a magazine style than we've done in the past with Luminary. But we try, the way that we try to do it is the standard marketing procedure is to feature, you know, our assets and some mm-hmm. of our more recognizable properties. Mm-hmm. So we may do a little extra picture or something like that, but we don't play favorites. We just try to feature our best assets and what will draw the tourists to the county.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I go out to a travel show, when I mention Ulster County, what is the first thing that people mention to me? Woodstock. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this year, we're having a special feature on the 50th anniversary of the Woodstock Festival. So
sure.
That will be something a little bit different. You know, how it's going to impact Ulster County. Obviously, the festival wasn't here. It was in Bethel Woods, or Bethel and Sullivan County.
Let's not tell people that, though.
But
it was Woodstock.
So there's a lot of other anniversaries. So we're a lot of our guide in this coming year will be about all the different anniversaries. We have the Woodstock Film Festival 25th anniversary. We have Phoenicia Festival Voice 10th anniversary, and on it goes. So we try to change things up a little each year to feature things that are up and coming.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Are there any other questions? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Carries. Thank you, Mr. Remsnyder.
Thank you.
Actually, while I've got you here, though, you know, starting next month, we may want to start to get more updates from each department. So just, I'm probably going to be emailing the deputy county executives, probably yourself included, just to kind of just get a sense of what's, you know, sort of happening within the department, so that way we're keeping in touch. So
happy to be before the committee anytime you need me.
I know. I appreciate it. Thank you, Rick.
Okay.
All right. All right. In the attempt to expedite the meeting, the chair at this time would entertain a motion to block resolutions 49, 50, 51, 52, and 53.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Waltman. Is there a second on the block?
Second.
All right. Seconded by Mr. DeLon. All those in favor of blocking those resolutions?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, carries. On the block of resolutions, 49 through 53, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, great. That way the public understands what we just did. Resolutions 49, 50, 51, 52, and 53 were all appointments to the Ulster County Planning Board. Those are recommendations made by the municipality, and we ratify those decisions. I don't think in the history of this legislature we have ever not gone with the recommended person by a town for the Ulster County Planning Board. So, all right. That said, Resolution 54, authorizing the county executive and chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an amendment to the Memorandum of Agreement with the City of New York to accept grant funding for the Ashokan Rail Trail for construction of public trailheads, Department of Planning. I believe Mr. White was seen somewhere in here. Is he?
I try not to be seen, but I figured since you didn't bundle this with all the other ones, I better show up.
Oh, Christopher.
With all the other
I'm going to repeat. I have no problems calling security.
I've heard that before.
No, Mr. White.
Do you want to make a motion?
Oh, good point. Is there
so moved.
Moved by legislators Archer and DeLon? Mr. White.
Thank you. This is an amendment to the 2015 Memorandum of Agreement that the Ulster County signed with the City of New York and the New York City DEP. That original agreement provided $2.5 million in grant funding to build the Ashokan Rail Trail, allowed us to build the rail trail along the reservoir, and also set up a lot of the conditions under which we did that. As we're about halfway complete with the construction of that trailhead, and it's been going very well. We are at a point where the DEP came to us and said, we don't believe that we can get through our own procurement process to build two of the three trailheads that were in the MOA in time for this to open. And they said, ironically, we were doing things at such a better speed than they were. They came and they said, we would like you to build these trailheads. So for the past 6 months, we've been negotiating on what that would look like, how much that would be. This amendment would add $1.88 million in grant funding to the already obtained $2.5 million in grant funding. The trailheads, some of you know, we have three major trailheads that are planned for the Ashokan Rail Trail. The trail runs from West Curley, roughly from Basin Road, to Boyceville at Route 28A. The trailheads are at both ends, one at West Curley, one at Boyceville, and one in the middle at Ashokan. So this is to build the two trailheads in the east, the one at the Woodstock Dyke fishing area and the one at Ashokan, which is close to the Olive Plaza in Ashokan. We have estimated that the cost of building these is just over $1.2 million, so we built in a lot of contingency on this. The DEP had designed Ashokan Station, so we weren't as involved with that. So we added a 45% contingency when you add up all of the
all of the extra charges we've added here. And then on the Eastern Trailhead, we're finalizing the design and then going to build it. Mm-hmm. So our intent would be, if you approve this, we would try to get out the bid by late March or April. As our rail trail project is winding down in June, we would roll right into building the trailhead so that we could open at least the eastern half of the trail by fall of this year. And I'll take any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. White? Okay. Seeing none, the resolution has been moved and seconded. No further discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. All right, Mr. White, stay where you're at. Resolution 55, issuing determination and findings pursuant to eminent domain procedure law for the Kingston Rail Trail, PIN 8758.04, in the Town of Hurley, Town of Ulster, and City of Kingston, Department of Planning. The chair at this time will entertain a motion to approve. All right, moved by Legislator Archer and seconded by Legislator Waltman. Mr. White.
For those of you that aren't familiar with the Kingston Rail Trail, it's the project that we are planning to connect the ONW Hurley Rail Trail to the city of Kingston at Washington Avenue. It's approximately a 1.8 mile paved trail. We have finalized our design of that trail. We are seeking to acquire right-of-way, and we have negotiated two out of the three right-of-ways. This resolution is a follow-up to the public hearing that you did in December. It's exactly the same format as what you passed in mid-2016 on our other rail trail project in the town of Lloyd for the Hudson Valley Rail Trail. And it essentially finds that the project is in the public interest. This is a pro forma resolution that needs to be done to fill out the requirements under eminent domain procedure law hearings, which we have to abide by for federal projects. At this point, we have had a donation of the largest easement from Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corporation, which was wonderful in negotiating the complexities of our trail being co-located with their distribution and transportation facilities. Adirondack Transit Lines, which we know as Trailways, has agreed to sell. We had been trying to buy the third easement from Ulster Savings. After 5 months of no response, they transferred the property to another entity last week. So we've made another offer of just compensation to the new entity. So our goal is to have a negotiated settlement, but this will allow us to finish the project, even if we don't have the will. And you'll remember, we're going down this right-of-way as part of the broader trail and rail policy that you set. We did this to avoid going down the Catskill Mountain Railroad's permitted property between Kingston and the town of Hurley. So this was the other option, and we're trying to get it to construction this year so that it's open early next year.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mr. White? Ms. Maloney.
It's just, first I'd like to say I'm uncomfortable with, I mean, this is not what I think eminent domain is necessary for walking trails. I like the project overall. It makes me very uncomfortable. I feel that we've always had the county has always had a great relationship with Ulster Savings. I'm just confused as to why this is being, I don't want to use the word fought by them, but it's not going as smoothly as with so many other entities that we've talked to, even the other two entities that are involved here. What is the holdup?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously we can't speak to what's going through the minds of, at this point now, the seller, because they are now no longer the owner of record of that particular parcel. But, Mr. White, you wanted to say something as well? Or?
Well, I would just say, firstly, Joe, I'm uncomfortable with using eminent domain ever. I did another project in the town of Lloyd where you had given all authorizations to do that, and we literally bent over backwards to accommodate requests from the adjoining landowners and the people that we were acquiring right away from. We've done that successfully with Central Hudson. We had to make, we had to negotiate that easement that we came to. In this particular case, the property that we're trying to acquire has been under contract between Ulster Savings Bank and what's called a contract vendee, the prospective buyer of that, which is an entity known as Hudson Valley Housing Development Fund Corporation, and they're out of Wappingers. They had bought this right-of-way to help access another property that is on the other side of our UND corridor that's called the Esopus Meadows Senior Housing Complex. It's a proposed low-income senior housing right along the Esopus Creek, right along the New York State Thruway. They hadn't ever closed on this property. They had a contract of sale that was from January or February of 2017. They did report that with the Ulster County Clerk, and then they never closed. And the reason they didn't close is because, in addition to this right-of-way that they needed for emergency access, they wanted an access across our right-of-way at the UND. And some of you may remember, last February, we brought to you a proposal to convey to them, independent of this, but for the appraised value of the property, an easement across that UND. That requires 16 votes, and it requires a public hearing. And when you set the public hearing, we only had 14 votes in the legislature for it, because there is some opposition to the proposal from this Hudson Valley Housing Development Fund. Basically, when they didn't get the easement that they needed, they essentially didn't want to close with Ulster Savings. And what I can only speculate, but if this, you know, I believe this is an educated speculation, is that Ulster Savings was trying to get this firm to close on the property. And basically, they knew we had made an offer on August 20th. We called them every week. We emailed them. Our attorney called them. Our attorney sent them letters. The county executive met with the president of the bank, and the holdup was always, well, our contract vendee hasn't approved it. And really what I think what it came down to is this was a way of saying to their contract vendee, either you've got to close on the property or we're going to sell it to the county. And that's what I think really happened. And now this contract vendee is coming back and they're saying, we want access across and emergency access along the parcel that you're trying to get an easement over. And we've already said that we are agreeable to that. We would do that in a minute. And we did that with our easements in Hudson Valley Rail Trail. The thing that I can't give them that they want is that other easement across the UND that they need to get to their property. And that's for two reasons. One is, I don't think we have the support on the legislature. When we last touched base with you in February, we didn't have 16 votes. And secondly, the DOT has expressly told me I can't do some kind of quid pro quo exchange of these easements, which they proposed, and you may know when their attorney showed up in December, that's precisely what he said. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue the way that we always do, which is we will go by the book. We will go by DOT's book, so if I get audited, every single thing is transparent and done to their spec. And again, my goal is, if we can avoid going to eminent domain, we avoid going to eminent domain. If we go to eminent domain, and then all of a sudden they'll come to the table to negotiate, we'll do that too. As I told the chairman today, I only lose time by going to eminent domain. Negotiated settlements are much quicker and easier and cheaper. And I will always seek that. And just one other thing, please. This is a federal DOT project. Right now, we got rid of the first alternative, which was going down the UND. This is the only alternative left. If we were not to acquire this property, then we would basically have to close out the project, and we would have to pay back the design costs. And we've spent nearly $200,000 to date on that, all of which is federal and state. But it would become county if we have to pay it back.
Well, it's unfortunate we spent money before we knew for sure. But I mean, was that group invited to this meeting today? Did we invite them?
it's tough to hear their story from. No, no, and I'm sure you're telling me. Hold on, I'm sure I'm hearing all facts, but I think it would have probably been proper to invite the group in and give them an opportunity. We're ready to vote on eminent domain without even hearing from the people that are going to be affected on it. That makes me uncomfortable. Secondly, you mentioned. A meeting with a lawyer. Was that in a committee meeting here or in the executive? I'm trying to recall that.
That was a Ways and Means meeting? No, it was at your public hearing that we held in December, and they had a lawyer come down from Latham and put a statement in. That statement has been given. We've compiled all of that as the record. Let me just clarify, like, you are not authorizing eminent domain by doing this. You are basically passing a statement that says, based upon what you heard and the public record at your public hearing, that this project is in the public interest. We have the power under the federal project to do eminent domain, but it's not. Yep. You're not voting on eminent domain. You're voting on whether the project's in the public interest, which is important.
Right, Joe.
By voting yes, we're giving you the right to more or less use.
It's more the statement of support can enable that as an option.
Is indeed a requisite for doing eminent domain at some point. Yes. But this is also the requisite for sometimes getting a party to the table to at least talk to you.
All right. So on the resolution, it was moved and seconded, right, by Archer. And, all right, so all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I'll be opposed.
All right. Mr. Maloney's opposed. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris. All right. We have finished all resolutions. Kathy, did you?
I just wanted to thank the folks from the trail community who came out tonight to support these two resolutions that we just discussed in the past. A lot of folks coming from a lot of distances and who have worked on both of these projects for many, many years. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, we have finished all resolutions for the evening. However, we have not finished our business. I have asked Mr. Doyle to give us a brief. Let me say that again. Brief update on the merger of City Bus UCAT. What's happening there? Mr. Doyle?
Well, if you saw the paper today, we've been working with the city and FTA to go through the necessary steps that would be needed to essentially have the city dissolve the city bus service. It's my understanding that at a meeting last night, the Common Council Caucus did not move this forward, and that they're going to seek to bring it back to the city's Finance and Audit Committee at another meeting, and then take it up at a later date.
Dennis, if I may, I'm less concerned right now about process. I think as you eloquently just said, the Freeman reported on this. I guess right now, what I'm really more interested in is just sort of just knowing where we sort of not just where we stand, but also procedurally, but also where are we at with any of the routes that have been decided, where are we at with, from a policy perspective, at least just understanding those pieces of this merger. So I apologize for interrupting, please.
Sure. The Transportation Council, when the decision was made in the 2016 sales tax agreement to seek the dissolution of the city service and create a single transit carrier, was asked to essentially provide some information in terms of what that would look like and how it would be done. We worked on a study for almost a year, held public meetings associated with that study, and we did something called a route optimization study. So when you look at that, the county, the study basically proposes that the county will operate three routes in the city of Kingston that are similar to the three, I shouldn't say, that mirror the three routes that the city currently has, but drastically change where they go. And the headways associated with them. In addition to those routes, we're also proposing to provide areas of the city that we would provide flexible service that could be called in demand response zones that could be called in, and the county would use those services to essentially pick up those areas in the neighborhoods that we are no longer servicing or would change the service that the city currently runs. A couple of things that you should know. The city bus service runs on one-hour headways. That means it's an hour to get the bus. And getting around the city, because it basically wanders through every neighborhood in the city, is very, very difficult. When we did the route optimization analysis, what we found was that there are a number of routes in the city that literally pick up less than 20 people in an entire day. So the city bus service has gone from approximately 150,000 people in ridership to somewhere between 80 and 50,000 people in ridership over a course of, say, 10 years.
Dennis, if I may, just because you've touched on it, but I want to just ask me to be a bit more pointedly. You know, when we were doing the loop, you know, we were very cognizant about time, right? Meaning that, you know, I believe Cynthia, you, me, Ben Olson from the Student Association, Tony Hokinson, then supervisor, you know, were working on things like the assumption that it was going to be, you know, that 20 minutes, right? You know, maybe 22, maybe 23, depending upon the day or the circumstances, whatever, but generally speaking, that we were operating under that assumption that if you got on a bus, you could go to your destination, and within that 20, you know, less than 25 minutes, you'd be able to catch another bus. I mean, is that a similar assumption of what we're working under for this as well, or no?
The headways that we've estimated that would change, assuming that we run the routes that we're proposing, is about a 30-minute headway on the routes on Broadway, a little bit less headway on the routes that connect essentially out to the social services area of of the city, about 15-minute headways. And then there's a service that the city runs. It runs out actually into the town of Esopus. They go out to the senior center in the town of Esopus. I don't know where that is. So those headways are about 45 minutes during the times that we run out there. But we wouldn't run out there on a regular basis. We would only run out there on peak hours to deal with those folks.
Sure.
And then that number would drop down to about 30 minutes. So that's the change in headways that would occur. We did an analysis of all of the appropriate destinations, the larger destinations in the city, in terms of where they are. We also did an analysis of all of the areas, sort of the social justice analysis of where the areas where those folks that are more likely to use transit services, where they are. We looked at the housing services that the city has, the number of housing projects that the city has.
And Dennis, do you actually have like a graphic that kind of like shows where these routes are?
It's in that route optimization
report. I know, but
that's online.
I know, but just make sure. Okay. Well,
yeah,
making sure
that route optimization
report. Can you send me the link, making sure I can make sure everybody else
absolutely
actually has it? Thank you.
Yeah.
Or send it to Mary.
But that's where we are. We also did some estimates of the cost of the service.
Mm-hmm.
So when we looked at those estimates of cost of services, we're not going to run these services. The idea here was not to run a service cheaper, but to run a more efficient and effective service. So we're not seeing a realization that we're going to have a significant amount of savings relative to these routes as it compares to the city, but we'll be much more efficient with respect to those routes. The city currently uses somewhere in a neighborhood of between 200 and 250 and maybe a little bit more in terms of their operating subsidy to subsidize transit. So we've asked the city to essentially provide for us for a period of a number of years that subsidy until we get the system up and running.
Sure.
In addition, we've also been able to secure funding so that during the transition period when we take over, the proposed takeover is on or about July 1, that we would actually offer free bus service for a period of time, usually 6 months was what we were thinking about. Within the city, for those folks to get used to the new system and also to bring ridership back in those areas as well. We're currently offering free services to veterans and to students using SUNY Ulster already. So we're familiar with this. We know how to do this, etc. We're also working with FTA. Does that answer all your questions?
Well, you know, part of, again, number one, I want to make sure that this is, again, kept to brief. But I also want to make sure that we're covering from this from the legislature side. I don't want to be involved in any of the the personnel or any of those kinds of. But there are legitimate policy questions with regards to how this sort of this merger happens, making sure that we're serving that constituency, making sure that we are also, as you mentioned before, maximizing service. So that was very, I'm very glad to hear that that is in fact part of your guiding principle with regards to this merger. So I don't know if there are other questions from the committee, but this may be a good place to kind of just take a pause.
Sure.
And see, Lynn, you have a question. I don't know, Brian, did you have a question too?
I'll go Lynn then Brian. Optimization. I realized that you had a couple of short and not as popular routes. Do those go away completely in this optimization plan that you put together? Is there concern from the city's perspective that, you know, there's going to be a small faction of individuals not served?
I'm not aware of any concerns that have been articulated to us by the city relative to factions that aren't served.
Mm-hmm.
The city has raised some questions in the technical committees that we've had about how the work would, or how the demand response zones would work, and we've explained that to the city. We currently, for example, have a significant amount of paratransit activity in the city as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been able, I think, to address those questions. Understand something, that when and if the city decides to move this through, one of the first things that we would do in terms of the route structure that we're proposing is a route structure that we're looking at that says this is what we think will work. But what we want to do and have to do under the statutes, under FTA guidance, is we have to go out and do public meetings associated with those routes, and we have to announce the changes regarding those routes. And then what we said to the city is, and what we normally do, is when we run route changes, we collect a significant amount of data. For example, the Trapeze software that you just talked about tonight, there's an amazing amount of data that we connect in terms of boardings and alightings relative to our transit system that the city doesn't have, right? And when we had to make decisions in terms of city routes, we actually had to put people on the city's buses to count riders. Mm-hmm. We'll use that data, and we'll use feedback from those folks that are essentially affected by the transit change in order to adjust those routes. And that's been the hallmark of UCAS. There's one thing that you should understand is that this is an organic transit system that responds to demands, that listens to elected officials, that listens to businesses, and basically tries to make sure that we can meet those services within a reasonable assumption of costs, right? And that's what we're trying to do here. I don't know what the city's going to do, but I know two things. I know that the current system is broken, right? And so there's been a lot of questions that we've been fielding that basically say, well, what about this future? What about that future? And I've sort of asked back, well, if you want to continue to maintain it, tell us what you're going to do. Because the Transportation Council continues to basically program federal money into this system. Now, we currently program federal money into the system on the basis of a 50-50 split. So we split the money with the city 50-50. I will tell you that the urbanized area that gets money for the city of Kingston extends from Rosendale to Saugerties to Woodstock. If you look at the service that Ulster County runs compared to the service that the city runs, we're entitled to a lot more money. We've been sort of holding the city afloat, so to speak, and they are currently spending all of their dollars on operation costs. They have no dollars in the bank that I'm aware of on capital costs. And they bought a lot of buses with ARRA funds. Those buses are going to come due. So there's some capital costs associated with that we have to look at. So if you look at what we've done in terms of the discussions with agreements, what we've said to them is we want to put money in the bank. It's called a capital asset account. And say that when and if we decide to do this, we want to have some money from the city in order to make sure that we have enough money to meet the capital costs. The other thing that we've done is we've said to the city that we're not sure what your response is going to be, but if you decide not to go forward, you need to tell us what you're going to do in terms of your program of projects, in terms of those things. All of the things that this legislature sees from the Ulster County Area Transit, we have a similar conversation with the Ulster County Area Transit at the Transportation Council level. And we program funds. called part of the Transportation Improvement Program.
All right. Dennis, let's not get too deep into that, although...
The only thing I want to say is that the transparency of what the city does with funds is limited.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And we're dealing with our ability and our management structure to meet the modern-day challenges of the federal government. They have some challenges in terms of meeting those requirements, and they're continually going out of compliance.
All right, Brian?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring this back to a discussion of the routes. You mentioned there's three routes, Dennis, in the Kings, in the city. And I guess, as I recall the presentation, they're all going to be contained within the city, correct?
Yeah, they
pretty
provide
much
connections outside the city,
right,
with the exception of the Sopus route that I mentioned.
Right. My one thought, though, is there are limited, let's say, retail options contained within the city of Kingston. And there are significant areas where there's public housing in the city, particularly, I'll say, Randolph Gardens and Broadway mm-hmm. East. And for those folks currently to get to a retail establishment, it's quite an arduous journey, just a one way.
Mm-hmm.
My hope was that somehow this could, when this is finalized, that there could be a route established that can get a person from that area of the city to our retail centers. I always call to mind the mother who needs to buy her children back to school clothes. Right now, if you're taking it, the options are severely limited. Whereas, you know, we all know where they need to go, and I'm just looking that there's routes planned for something like that where a person can get reasonably out to a retail district within a reasonable period of time. I mean, I know.
So, a couple of things with respect to that. One is that the Ulster County Area Transit currently operates significant amounts of service that runs in and out of the city. And that hub and spoke system generally goes to Hanaford. Once you move to a single transit carrier, the ability to coordinate those that service is a lot better. So when we looked at the routes and when we proposed the headways, we proposed them looking at that hub and spoke system continuing to exist in Hanaford. We also, quite frankly, looked at another hub and spoke at social services. So we'll be able to connect with our current operating and amend our current operating schedules as needed so that we can provide that outside service, in particular the outside service to the retail areas outside the city of Kingston.
And Dennis, just clarification, because you're saying that where Family Court and DSS is located currently right now is one of the potential spokes. Now, is that because of just its location in proximity to retail, or is it because of its, in essence, its large parking lot where you can actually sort of maneuver in through there? I mean, what's the justification for that?
A couple of reasons. One is yes, relative to, it is a significant destination for the current riders. If you look at the current riders in the city of Kingston, they're captive. And if you look at the ridership in the city of Kingston, it swells at the end of the month and at the beginning of the month. And the main places that they go are to social services. So if you look at those things, one of the things we wanted to do is make sure we covered that destination. And that's why that's out there. And once we get into that destination, we wanted to make sure we could move them beyond that. So that's literally the reason. There's a lot of captive riders in the city.
Okay. All right. So... I want to make sure. Are there any other questions by any of the legislators? Okay, Mr. Cornell.
Thanks, Hector. So, Brian, I know it's something that you're very passionate about. I know we've talked several times, and we've done a lot of work on this, a lot of homework. I think we've addressed a lot of the concerns. I know that there's a faction of drivers who are concerned. I want to assure you that we have places for these people to work as we expand the service. Some of them may stay within the city, but I would offer to you, if you're interested, I'd like to hopefully have you become an advocate for this project. So if you'd like, I could assign a driver to run these routes with you, if you can see them firsthand. If you want to do that, just give me a call. I'll take care of that for you, okay?
Okay. All right. Dennis, thank you.
I don't get to say one last thing.
Dennis, have you ever heard that brevity is the soul of wit?
A couple of tippity taps.
That less is more? Have you forgotten? Has it been so long? It's been a decade, I know, since I've been your committee chair, but I think... Go ahead.
No,
what do you got? No.
I'm actually doing a Chris White. I'm actually kidding around.
All right, please go.
I'm not as good at it.
I want you to know that you are dismissed with prejudice. Please go.
Much appreciated.
Thank you, Dennis, as always. And I do apologize. I know Dennis was actually at one point beginning to get into the TIP process, the Transportation Improvement Plan, which is always a dangerous topic with Dennis. But that said, though, at some point, though, we should actually have you come back to us to actually explain further, you know, that process, as well as, of course, all the other different things that your office does. Just much like I did with Mr. Remsnyder. However, unlike with Mr. Remsnyder, I will put you on a time limit. So please, go ahead.
Just two announcements. One is if you read the paper, the county did get a housing rehabilitation award for $600,000.
Yep.
Who's
administering that, though?
RUPCO will be administering that. We will be coming back to you with a revenue contract between the state and us by March, hopefully. And I also want to let you know that last Tuesday, in the middle of that snowstorm, the continuum care conducted a homeless count in the county. I don't have those numbers yet, but there are a couple of agencies that really need to be called out with respect to that. We had a tremendous response and assistance from the sheriff department, and we also had a tremendous response and assistance from the Veterans Department. And all of those folks that participated were really, really amazing. I also want to call out the mayor of the city of Kingston, who also actually went out and participated in that homeless count. It was a tough night. We found people probably where they shouldn't be, but it was really a really good effort from everyone concerned in terms of those homeless counts. Thank you.
All right, Dennis. Thank you. All right, moving along, we have some guests, our friends from the Industrial Development Agency. Our chair, thank you, by the way, for all of you for what's that? Sure. I mean, if you want, I could just repeat and go and say brevity is the soul of wit, but I've already said it once. Dennis, don't come back, please. what's that? Okay. So Randall, thank you for coming, and as well as to all of the board members. I can see in the audience that we have Rick Jones and Mike Hamm, and is that Paul Andreessen in the corner over there? Great. Okay. So you know, Randall, you guys have been in the news a bit, so a bit. You know, why don't you just share with us how things have been going over there? Obviously, there may be some questions, but also at the same time, I think we want to get an update on where things stand with the UTEP, with some of the things that you guys have been working on since appointment in May. Sure. So,
well, as you know, the contract with the Office of Economic Development expired on the 31st of December, mm-hmm. and we've been in the process of transitioning staff and facilities. It hasn't been the smoothest of processes, but we do what we have to do despite obstacles being thrown in our way. We aren't in chaos, but we are a set of seven volunteers working hard to do the work of the taxpayer while being fair to businesses. And we should all be contributing to the success of the IDA and rowing in the same direction. Our focus over the last couple of months has revolved around organizing and getting a handle on the finances for the agency, developing a website, finding a more permanent office location for us to store documents, files, and to do intake for potential projects. Paris is our number one priority from now through the end of March.
Why don't you explain what Paris is?
Paris is the system where we, you know, when we have a project, at the end of each year, they have to provide us information for jobs created, the tax dollars that they've used, you know, the sales tax exemption and the pilots. And we have to take that information and enter it into a state-run system. They provide us information from, I believe, the New York State 45 and a bunch of other forms.
Yeah, I was going to say, I believe the acronym is like public accountability.
Yeah, all of that stuff goes to the authority's office.
Yeah, it goes back to the authority's budget.
You know, so that has been our primary focus. We, you know, those are due on the 31st. We have 27 to 28 projects
that you're maintaining
that are live.
Yeah, records on.
And the deadline for them to provide the information that we need was the end of last month. We are in February. We've gotten 11 to 12 of those. Mm-hmm. Rick is chair of the audit committee, so it's his job to beat the bushes to get that information out of them for those that are lagging behind. And you know, so we're pretty confident about that. We've opened up a dialogue with the authority's budget office. So they're aware of our situation. They've told us we know what's going on down there. We're watching. So they know, and they've also told us that, you know, if we need an extension, they're happy to give it to us.
Oh, good.
Just
good.
Don't call us on March 31st when they're we've got that out. You know, because we do not have professional staff right now, we are working on an RFP that will go out. My plan is to present that to our board on the 13th for them to, they'll get it probably tomorrow because we have a meeting next Wednesday. So they'll get that tomorrow and they'll have a week to look at it, and then they can come to the meeting on the 13th and talk about that, and hopefully they'll approve it and it'll go out the door and we can start, you know, soliciting people to come in and interview with us, and hopefully we can get a staff in place. And I would probably look to the legislature to give us some ideas as to other places we might be able to get that out so that we reach the broadest group of people that we can. And I don't know if perhaps maybe even, you know, the procurement office might be able to post the RFP up there for us as well. So that would be helpful. As you know, the website was disabled last week.
Yeah, that's
another surprise.
Well, I followed up on that also with the chair as well as the deputy county executive who covers that. So please go ahead.
Well, I can tell you Ulster Publishing has been generous and they have offered to host our site, our documents that need to be made public. You know, when we do meeting announcements and projects that go up. So they've been really, really generous, and they have offered to host our stuff. And in fact, they sent me something Friday, so I've been looking at it all week long, and I think Rick has had an opportunity to take a look at it. It looks pretty good from what they were able to grab after it was dismantled / destroyed.
Were you not sent the files, by the way, from the county?
We had the files from the county, but because there were cache pages, so it was actually quite easy for them to move a lot of stuff, but I will tell you there so that you're not alarmed, and I'll send you the web link for that, so that you're not alarmed. And I don't know why this is, but information from September through December is not there. So
was the page not updated, or is it just old?
It was all there before it was taken down. I can't speak to why it's not in the material.
All right, make a note
that
to go and follow
available.
Up with Deputy County Executive Mark Ryder with regards to those missing files.
I do have the files,
and
in talking to Will over in Getty's office, I mean, I basically have to go through those files, and I'm going to be looking for those documents that need to go up for each month. So it's a tedious hunk of work that needs to be done with respect to that, but you know, we need to do what we need to do, and I'm going to do it. So it will be slow. There will be holes, I'm letting you know that now, but we're doing all that we can to get something up and running. I also had yesterday a meeting with a web development firm. They sent me a proposal this evening, so hopefully I'll be looking at that proposal and perhaps bringing them in to talk to the board so that we can get our own nicely designed site, move our domain from the county to our own place, and get all of those things up. UTEP, it's my goal that we look at updating our UTEP in a more precise way instead of making changes in a whimsical manner or based on political pressure. I'd like to see a study of the UTEP of agencies from Albany down to perhaps Westchester County. This way we can identify best practices and model our UTEP using practices employed by other IDAs. Of course, with any such exercise, we'll need to control for business type, job area size, population, and industries.
And by the way, UTEP is the
Uniform Tax Exempt Policy.
There you go.
Okay. I think something as important as the UTEP is it's not a one-size-fits-all, so we need to identify best practices and adapt our UTEP accordingly. Another best practice that should be standard for us but isn't should be the process of doing a cost-benefit analysis for any and all prospective projects that are looking for inducement. We should be making decisions based on sound financial information, accurate information, and measurable outcomes that benefit taxpayers in the community. We should also be willing to take measured risks for businesses that seek to invest in areas who need the most help. The accelerator. Our newest members have always talked about ways in which we can think outside the box so that we might find ways to broaden our services to industries who aren't large enough or who can't afford fees associated with benefits that involve pilots, sales tax, or mortgage tax exemptions. An accelerator is an idea I've been kicking around in my head and have been working with Galileo on since September. I want us to be more visible. I want us to assist smaller to medium-sized businesses, and I think consultants on the IDA dime is an excellent way to help companies in Ulster who oftentimes go unnoticed. Once we get our footing, I'd like to also pull together a group of manufacturing and industries to talk about the IDA and our efforts with our accelerator concept. That gives us a chance to listen to their needs, and then we can get a sense of what services might be most beneficial to them. Okay. So that concludes.
All right. Well, I also, just to be candid, you know, we were in receipt of an email today with, Mr. Maloney?
Is that it for
that,
Mr.
Yeah,
Maloney,
I'm happy to answer any questions and
move
on to me and my board members.
I don't know if you were transitioning because I had questions if you were. Otherwise
yeah, no, but I was just asking him a question.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
No, you're okay. So, you know, we're in receipt of an email with regards to, I guess, one of the businesses, I guess, that you were trying to help out, Ceres Technologies?
Yeah. You know, I didn't come prepared to discuss that. I've shared that information with you and the chairperson, and I think you guys are free to share it with your members as you see fit. I will tell you that at this point, it is not an IDA issue. Mm-hmm. So,
because it's not in front of you.
I have nothing
further to add to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, just so I understand, though, I mean that request came from the town supervisor of the town of Ulster, correct?
So I just
understand timeline wise and understand the origin of it. Okay.
I received a phone call from the supervisor for the town of Ulster, indicating that there was a problem with a business in the building.
In Tech City. Okay.
And I was asked if we could put that before the board, and I said, you know, they need to fill out an application. And they filled out the application, and, you know, I received what was forwarded to me was an email that had gone to Chairperson Bartels, Mr. Maloney, Mr. Quigley.
Mr. Jim Maloney, I'm assuming?
Jim Maloney.
Not
yes.
Joe.
Not Joe. Jim Miller.
I didn't get that.
Mr. Hine and Ms. Holt.
So it went to the county executive and to Suzanne Holt from my company.
That is correct. And it is the same email that I shared with my members at our meeting on this last Wednesday.
Yes. But I was not.
So that was the same email.
Different email.
And I simply forwarded it to my board.
Yes, this is a
you know, they filled out the application and they came and they presented, and then this false narrative showed up and
got
the rest is history.
All right.
But we did not instigate that in answer to your question. The IDA did not instigate that. It was punted to us, and I looked at it, and it was within our mission, and it was a business that was looking to bring 40-something-odd businesses from Dutchess County, to Ulster County, and most of those jobs were $40 and $50-an-hour jobs, and it is within our mission, and considering you know, the amount of money that we give, you know, for other projects, for low-wage jobs. Here we have somebody who is bringing higher-wage jobs, and the small amount, I mean, it's, you know, for us, any amount over $2 is a lot of money. But, you know, $88,000 and bringing 40 or 50 jobs at $40 to $50 an hour, I think we calculated at, what, $2,000 a job?
Well, I did some quick calculations, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
Some quick calculations. $88,000 $2,000 per job that we would be spending to assist them versus a project. We mentioned the initial project.
Point, but that's new jobs, though, right? Because I say because. Oh, the
new
existing
jobs.
Yeah,
very similar jobs.
Yeah, same, because he already has 300 people, I thought.
Right, he already has 300 and stuff.
So, because remember, he's moving those 300 people to that location as well, but you're saying it's 40 new jobs, right?
So we're already there.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying, but no,
yeah,
no,
but
I'm
he's
saying.
Moving 41.
Yeah.
Versus, so $2,000 per job versus a project, which has not yet been approved. I don't know whether it will be or not. But
pick a hotel.
No, it's not a hotel. Where 13 and a half jobs would have been created at a lower, much lower salary of approximately $20 an hour, $25 an hour at best. And for the amount of inducement that we were giving, sales tax and mortgage tax over 10 years, it would come out to $125,000 for each one of those 13 jobs. So, you know, the quid pro quo and the danger of losing those kind of jobs and not being able to assist that individual who were willing to do it, but for a variety of reasons, you have the emails as to why. But $2,000 to spend versus $125,000, obviously it's a big difference. And
for
a disappointment to the board.
For the count, and my understanding is that is the county's, one of the county's largest private employers, number one, and it's a business that's been here for over 24, 25 years. So.
That actually grew here.
Yeah.
That's the other thing too. It's like, you know,
yeah,
back when they were Precision Flow, it grew,
right,
you know, out of Kevin's garage.
So I'm happy to answer any other questions that the board, the committee might have.
I think the dueling ones over here. I'm going with Legislator Archer and then followed by Legislator Flo.
I just have one. I mean, I understand the service and what transpired. But one thing I'm uncomfortable with, and I would hope that we can get our partners in IT to address, is the message that comes up on the county's website for the IDA. I find it really not the appropriate message for, you know, a public benefit court that we're trying to, you know, bring business and grow business. To say you are not authorized to access this page really has a negative connotation. And regardless of what transpired, you know, there's a better way of handling it. And I hope we can get that changed.
So as you know, I emailed the deputy county executive with regards to that issue. I have not heard whether or not that page or that message will change.
It hasn't. So. I just checked. So we need to get it changed.
One of the things that could be done, I mean, you know, ideally, you know, it would have been wonderful if it had been left, because that was the impression that we were given.
Which?
That it would have been left, and just don't touch it. And
until you can transition
until,
it
well, that
to
was,
your
that
own
was,
webpage,
right, that
right.
was the goal. Or, you know, I mean, I would have put in a request to perhaps have the legislature request that somebody update that on our behalf.
Sure.
In absent that, you know, ideally they could, you know, they could put a message redirecting it to the new site that we have.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very helpful temporarily. But until we get things up, and I think, you know, Rick has seen the site. It mirrors pretty much what was there without all the county stuff on it. And you know, we've tidied it up, and I've got to go through each one of those pages again to make sure that things are accurate. But you know, it will do for now, and it's not on get. You know, it's on. It's like Explore Hudson Valley /business/IDA. So it's not, you know, like. Also publishing, blah, blah, blah.
All right. Joe?
Yeah, you know, when you look up economic development in this committee, and this is my first meeting being a part of it, one of the first things you look up in the description or the bylaws, issues pertaining to the IDA. And I think what's going on the last month or two, I think those are issues. You know, as a legislator, we appoint these citizens to volunteer their time to act on a board, and I feel like I've seen them in the paper defending themselves quite a bit. And I think this, I mean, I really think we have to have an honest and open conversation on what's going on here. I think the people deserve that, you know, the 200,000 people that live in this county. This is their IDA. And when you do get on and you see access, a picture of our executive and a statement, you are not authorized to access this page. I mean, let's think about this for a minute. Somebody went and shut down the IDA page. Why did that happen? When did it happen? Has to do with the why. Does anyone in this room know how and why that happened? Can anybody tell me that?
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones?
Cut me off. I have a tendency to talk as long as Dennis. But,
Mr. Jones, I will cut you off at any given moment.
And I'll keep talking.
Go ahead.
During the month of January, after the contract expired, we were under the understanding that we would continue to get support, at least for the website. By the way, we had not gotten any support in terms of questions answered from the Office of Economic Development, in spite of our best efforts to call them and get response to certain questions that I needed answers to. But aside from that, during the month of January, some of the people in the IT department that I reached out to were able to help us post a few things. On the 25th of January, I attempted to post the agenda for our meeting of the following week, the meeting of the 30th. And I began to experience some problems, being told that you'll have to talk to the people in charge of the IT department, which I finally was able to reach them. And I was told, we can no longer post the agenda because you no longer have a contract with the county. And I attempted to explain to them we had an agreement that they would continue to keep the website up and running. He said, no, I won't post it. Okay, fine. I sent an email reflecting on our conversation, which was quite long. I recounted
and
our conversation.
And who was that you spoke to?
Jose de Leon.
Joe.
I recounted the conversation I had with him. About 5 minutes later, he came back and said, okay, we'll post the agenda. On the 20th, and I'll call you on Monday. On the 28th of January, which was Monday, he called me at 8:35 in the morning to say, we won't be able to do anything for you any longer. I've been told to take the website down. I said, you've been told? Who told you to take the website down? And he told me who told me to take the website down. It was Suzanne Holt and Mark Ryder. I said, well, you know, you put us in a terrible predicament here. We were told we get support. This is the People's website. It's the only way which anybody who is interested in our activities, that those activities can be made clear and plain to the public, to no avail. So in the afternoon of that day, the website was taken down. I received all the files in a Dropbox file. I forwarded it to Randall. I am not exactly the most facile person with Dropbox files. But at that point, we were able to reach out and get some assistance from the newspaper who agreed to put our website, Ulster County IDA's website, up on his server for a period of time until we could find somebody else. So that's
now, Mr. Maloney, I will tell you, I have a, you know, we out because we're not allowed to talk to the executive staff. We have to go through our attorney, who then goes to them, gets the information and answers to questions that we need, and then it's sent back to him, and then he distributes it to me or Rick, depending on who's asked the question. But I received a memo from him on January the 5th outlining the conversation and the arrangement that we weren't going to make and under the website. We were told the UKITA website has an independent URL, ulsterplanning.com, which currently links to the county's website at blah, 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 blah. The UCCRC does not have an independent URL. It is housed on the county's site at 8 blah, 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 blah. When you are ready, the county's information services department will facilitate the transfer of the domains, web pages, and current content. And then it says, Holt confirmed the above arrangements, namely the website will be quote-unquote maintained and quote-unquote held, my terms, until the agency has created its own website. Once we have our own website, the county will arrange for the transfer of the materials on the current agency website to our new website. So we were under the assumption that it was going to be held until we were able to make the transition, and then, you know, like most, you know, it was wiped out 2 days before our next meeting, which of course caused a fracas. And you know, where's the website? Blah 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 blah. It's a mess.
Okay, Jeff.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's disappointing to hear, a little alarming. I watch as, in the name of economic development and tourism, in other words, we put private businesses and magazines we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on. We put private businesses on our website to attract tourism, and we couldn't leave a site up. Was there anything legal that we had to remove a site, put a statement on like that? I mean, we're talking about the executive. We're talking about a deputy who's running for executive. We're talking about the head of economic development behaving in this way. Whatever happened to the greater good? I mean, I'm kind of posing a philosophical question here. Whatever happened to the greater good? What is this? What is happening here? And why is this playing out in the paper? And why are we just now getting to the bottom of this and almost maybe not getting to the bottom of this? What is going on here? And this isn't the only thing that alarms me. That what I've read and followed in the papers and talked to colleagues about with regards to the contract that I believe kicked off this mess that has got to the point where we have high-ranking, well-paid, paid by the county, the people of this county. Some of these people are making $100,000 a year. And they're making decisions like this where we have hundreds of thousands of people out there that can't even look something up on the internet. For what? I mean, for what? What led to that? What led to us using tax dollars to tell Mr. DeLeon to take that down? Oh, and while you're at it, put a real nasty statement up there to teach him a lesson. I mean, that's the only speculation.
Well, the last
is,
part
is to teach a lesson.
The last part I'm not getting. That's not. So, let's
talk about the contract.
All right, well, Joe, just make sure, just try to keep it within balance.
I know it's getting late.
No, no, go ahead.
Can we, now I have a better feel, and it's, to be honest, kind of what I suspected. I have a better feel for what happened with the website. It's disappointing and alarming. Let's talk about the contract.
Sure.
Why don't you, I've read plenty in the paper, while we're dealing with issues that pertain to the IDA, why don't we talk about a big one? Your administrative contract.
Sure.
Why don't you give us a rundown?
We've had a contract, this particular contract, that the board unanimously approved on December the 12th. Very same contract for almost 6, 7, 8 years. It had a 30-day out clause in it and everything.
Which is a standard, by the way, I believe, of most of our contracts, if not all of our contracts.
I've never seen a contract.
It's either 30 or 60. Yeah. I mean, some of them are 90, but that's pretty rare. Normally it's 30 or 60.
As an aside, one of the other oddities is that, you know, we don't work for the Office of Economic Development. They are employees of ours. We're an independent agency. And oddly enough, the contract that we have been signing has been one that has been developed by the county. So hopefully that's going to change when we do the RFP. But in any event, the board voted unanimously 7-0 on the 12th of December to renew that contract, provided that it had the 30-day out clause in it. That was the contract that was presented to us a week prior to the meeting. And it was the contract that was
presented by who, by the way?
Our staff. It was the Office of Economic Development staff.
Okay, so this is the contract that they presented to you.
Right. It's, you know.
So you guys then voted You guys voted 7-0 to approve the contract that they presented to you.
Correct.
Okay.
I did not get any notification that there was discussion of changing, knocking out the 30-day clause. I got no call the week before the meeting. I wasn't pulled aside before the meeting started. I wasn't pulled aside when we took a quick break to go into executive session. I wasn't pulled aside after we came out of executive session. So there was ample opportunity to discuss that. After the vote, we adjourned. I asked to get the contract so that I could have Joe, our attorney, look at it, and then I had planned on signing it, and I'm told, there are changes, and I ask, what are the changes? And it's like, the county wants to remove the 30-day out clause. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not signing that. That's not what my board has authorized me to sign. And I left. And so that was it. That's how it all started.
Just to point, when you looked at the contract,
mm-hmm.
was the 30-day out already removed, or was it crossed out?
No, ma'am. It was circled in black and hashed out.
All right.
Well, that's not the contract that you voted on. The contract you voted on contained, which is the standard one, which actually has
the
30 days, right?
The contract that we voted on was the contract that was in Ms. Holt's hand and before us, but when I went to go sign it, the one that she gave me, she had already circled the provision, the 30-day provision, that the county was going to take that out. So that had to be taken out before they would sign it. And I wasn't going to sign it.
Okay, so but because I just want to make sure I'm just clear, again, just from a timeline perspective, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, by the way, but I just want to make sure we have it on the record from a timeline perspective that, so you guys were presented with a contract, which is the standard contract that you had approved previously as well. You guys then approved that contract 7-0, and then when you went to go to execute the contract that had been voted on by the board, there was then a change being presented to you.
That is correct.
Okay. No, that's just, and I'm trying not to be, not...
And, I wasn't in the room by myself. Other board members who were here were in that room, so they...
Okay. So the board also heard this. Okay. Kathy and then Joe. Sorry.
Yeah. So, I will preface my remarks with that to the extent that constituents in my district have contacted me, they're very distressed about this.
So am I.
And their distress is around, actually, I guess, this point, where the contract came back with the executive's office saying we don't want the 30-day out clause, presumably because a lot of work that goes on in that office occurs over a short period of time, several months at the beginning of the year, and then they don't have a lot of work. And so, as in many contracts that cover a span of time, where there's a concentration of work and then a gap, if you will, it doesn't really serve the entity who's doing the work to let you have a contract just during the time they work hard and then have you potentially change to another provider after they've done the work. And these filings for RP is... Paris is Public Accountability Recovery Information Services. I have it from the media. So if that's due in April and the county contracts to do this work and does it, and then the contract is withdrawn in May, it leaves them having done the work of a year in, for 4 months or 5 months of services. As a public benefit corporation, the IDA has to basically behave in the way that a private company would and the way that a public entity would. I mean, your standards are very high. And so I think there is an answer to the rhetorical question, why couldn't we continue doing a website for you? I'm sorry that the communication wasn't clear on it, but I don't think that we can give away services. I mean, we had the comptroller's office 2 years ago coming in and saying we couldn't give away 50 cents worth of electricity in our charging stations to the public because that would be a violation of the use of public goods for a private entity. So I think there's a lot of issues here, and it seems to me that when that contract came back with something marked out, that was the opportunity to open the conversation and to know ahead of time what services you were receiving, how much they were going to cost, who else could provide them to you, and try to maintain the status quo until you could answer those questions. My constituents think that it is a very good idea for Ulster County to help the Ulster County IDA. They're not happy at all with another county coming in and having access to all our leads and all the information that we have from people who contact us. So I know others disagree about this, but my constituents are the ones coming to me and saying these things, and they would like our IDA to basically function well with the rest of the county, if at all possible. And I, you know, I can understand things fall apart, but there were many options when you got that contract with 30 days marked out, and deciding that you would not go back to the board and ask about signing it, or try to get, you know, you say, okay, we've got a year that we're dealing with an entity that's not, you know, that's requiring this bad condition from us, and we'll figure out all these other things, and then we'll ditch them at our first legal opportunity. I would understand that.
No. So first off, Kathy, number one, you've also now just also been spoken against the fact that we actually have a standardized contract. I mean, we have a standardized contract for a reason that actually includes an escape clause of 30 to 60 days. And that's something that we did in the wake of the jail. That's something that this legislature, by the way, did. So, you know, it's one of those important reforms that we put into place. So that way the county would actually have a standardized contract that includes an escape clause. There's a reason why those things are standard for a reason. So
if I may,
Let me please finish. So one of the things that clearly from a process standpoint that I have trouble with at this point is that they were presented a contract, they voted on that contract, and then suddenly there was a change to that contract, right? And apparently, again, I could be wrong, and please feel free, anybody who was there, I was away. You know, apparently the board was present, meaning the entirety of the board was present, which means at that point the board, I guess, made a unified decision at that point. And I don't know if, was there anybody there from the board who then said, well, you know, we should renegotiate the contract? Mr. Jones, you seem to be putting your hand up, so.
Well, I was
What were you?
The legislature.
Okay.
Towards comments.
All right.
But let's not miss the key points. We had a lively discussion in the executive session prior to coming out and voting 7-0 to approve the contract. That lively discussion took about an hour and a half. And we all agreed that we could approve a contract with the Office of Economic Development if the 30-day clause stayed in. I want to make that very clear.
Okay, but that was in executive session, so maybe
that was executive session. And
that was your decision.
And we made a decision. We didn't vote in there. We had a sense of the group. We didn't vote in executive session. We came out and we voted in public session. Okay. I've done a lot of contracts. I've read a lot of contracts. I've negotiated a lot of contracts. Not as many as this guy, but a lot of contracts with clients that are looking to borrow money. And if you come to a closing and you've changed something as the person who wants to borrow money from it, you change it and you demand, I want my money, but with the things I just changed that I circled and crossed out,
I understand that.
The closing is over.
Yeah, so you have to start over again or it's done.
The lady from OED changed the contract. She didn't, in my opinion, deal with the legal department here in the county. Legal department, there's no legal department worth their weight in gold, or they shouldn't be lawyers, that would circle and cross out and present that as an alternative for discussion. It was circled and crossed out. It was probably done at the last minute, in my opinion. So it was presented, it was given to the chair to sign. He refused to sign it because the board had approved something entirely different. Subsequent to that, the board members filled it out. That evening and the next day, the chair called all the members and asked what they wish to do. We said, we voted 7-0 that 30-day clause stay in. Unless it goes back in, we have no intention of dealing with them. Now, we instructed our attorney to begin discussion with the War Department here. We told them, quite frankly, we voted on leaving the 30 days in. It's not it. We signed the contract as we anticipated, and we will work with you. It's a one-year contract with a 30-day out. One-year contract, no different from what was occurred before and had occurred for the previous 7 years. So the point is being missed. You don't deal with somebody who tries to schnooker you at the last minute, and that's what happened. We were schnookered with a change to a contract as opposed to the contract that had been given to us by the staff of OED a week before for the entire board to look at and to approve and to consider. At that point, I'm not dealing with somebody who attempts to put one over on it.
All right.
That's what happened.
All right. So Joe, then Lynn.
Sure. And we don't know who made that decision. Or I mean, somebody to circle it and cross
it
out.
I have opinions, but I can't.
I mean, I'm under the impression that they were working for you in theory.
That is
who.
That is.
I mean,
correct.
Can you imagine somebody that in an administrative position going and saying no? I'm just taking this out. I mean, I'd love to know.
Well,
I mean, I think that's something that we need to ask Ms. Holt. Who took this out? Was there anything else? Obviously, I think any reasonable person would seem to think that if you're going to take a 30-day out of the contract, you're under the impression or you're worried that you may not finish out the year or the contract. Is there any reason that Suzanne or the IBA should have, or the administrative staff should have felt, and then after you answer, I'd like to make another point, should have felt or could have felt, or was there anything happening for them to think that they should have been on the defensive with taking that out of the contract?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, we had talked about Galileo doing this accelerator without walls, and I met with Suzanne, when I was elected chair back in July, and we set up this process where I would meet with her every Monday, and I would talk about things, and I said, what I'd like to do, at the end of August, I asked for resumes so that I could see the skill sets that we had. And I said, I didn't ask to see your resumes because I'm looking to do anything with anybody. What I'm trying to do is I want to see what skills we have within the department that are providing services to us so that I can figure out a way to supplement that, because I recognize that we're not the only group that you guys do work for. You do the economic development, the EDA, you do the revolving loan fund, you do the IDA and a number, and I think it's the film office, a newly created film office or something. So, I was looking at ways in which we could supplement what they were doing so that we could have people who could go out, because they don't have the time to go do that. Negotiation for our contract actually began in the end of September, October, and it was because I had one small change, and that request and change was simple. I would like to see the resumes and have the opportunity for our board to meet people who are assigned to work on IDA matters so that we know that they have the capabilities that we need to do the work. That was my only request, and I thought it was reasonable. And that request was made in September and followed up with emails. I got a draft change with the language in it.
So you didn't see it coming.
And so when we got the contract, believe it or not, my request wasn't even in there. That was just nixed. And as we were talking back in October, there was no mention of taking out 30 days. And just to take a quick leap from Legislator Nolan, I mean, I'm trying to understand how you leap from, we have a 30-day and I've got work to do from January through March, and I'm afraid you're going to get rid of me after I do this work. I mean, any reasonable person would say to themselves, if I'm doing my job, I have nothing to worry about. There's no reason for me to be turned out if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So it is an irrational.
Randall. In Ms. Nolan's defense, it was her constituent.
The thought that it was going to happen was irrational to me.
So it came out of nowhere. And it sounds, and just to make kind of an observation and a point, over these last couple of months, it doesn't seem as though your administrative staff looked at themselves as employees in the traditional sense, and I think that's important. And it was always a concern. It was a concern to me as a taxpayer, and it's a concern to me now as a taxpayer and an elected official.
when you look at an IDA, and this is a conversation that goes all the way up, you name the big-time politician in New York right now, both sides of the aisle, from Amazon all the way down. This is a big conversation, these IDAs and these tax exemptions.
Yeah, sure.
When we look at an administrative staff, there's an old saying about serving two bosses. I changed it a little. But when your boss, who appoints you to a pretty high-paying job, is the executive of the county, who's gathered over $1.2 million in donations over a 10-year span of being executive, and you're asking that person to then answer to that person, let me remind you of a fact. That's Suzanne Holt as the head of economic development, which is a whole nother alarming. You know, I've looked to other counties. I've talked to people in Dutchess County. They do not think it's a good idea to have the EDA and the IDA as close as we do, to the point where when the IDA still had a website, it would send you, you know, to the EDA and vice versa. You have somebody that's been reimbursed over $5,000 out of the executive's re-election campaign, and that person is supposed to prioritize you over his wishes. It's an impossible situation to put anyone into, and at times I think I felt bad. These are facts, and I am not going to apologize about putting these facts out there because these kinds of facts and these kinds of conversations in a real set open setting where the public can be a part of this debate and understand what's going on and hear what's really going on. People are so fed up with these backdoor dealings and these kinds of facts not being put on the table, discussed openly. We shouldn't be cringing when I talk about donations. We should be. We should be relieved. I'm relieved when I hear someone from another, from Washington, D.C. or Albany, as rare as that is, have these kinds of conversations. And I'd like my county to have these conversations. And I know my constituents are not as concerned with the workload of the IDA, but I give your constituents a lot of credit for knowing the specific administrative workload and when it's heavy and when it's not. That's impressive on their part. My constituents are far more worried about these tax exemptions, what they perceive as real, a system that is ripe for corruption, all the way up to down to Washington, D.C., all the way up to Albany. And these are conversations we have to have. I think when you start to plug in facts and you come up with a mathematical equation, what's more likely, what's most likely? I don't like what I'm coming up with, and I don't like what any fair person's going to come up with when you start saying, when you start looking at the website, when you start looking at some of these things that are coming out about a denied IDA contract and a follow-up lawsuit and the executive's possible involvement in that. When you have the website being shut down, when you have this contract being manipulated, I'll tell you right now, I'm wondering if we can't get this together, whether Ulster County is even fit to have an IDA right now. Really, let's be honest. And then let's look at the EDA and what they're doing over there. Question to the chair. Do we have any other entity like the IDA in this county?
Resource Recovery Agency.
Or the EDA,
I will have you removed if you speak out of line.
Or the EDA or anything else where we host or help a website. Is there anything else like that?
So in my question to Deputy County Executive Ryder, I did sort of posit that, and his explanation was that, we have a contract with the EDA. And so I said, well, if that's the case, I'd like to go and see the contract. I have yet to get the contract, so I don't know when that information will be presented to me.
They said there's a contract?
That is what the Deputy County Executive said.
And then could not produce one.
This was... I'd have to go and look about how long ago it was.
So it seems we do host, and we're not even...
I don't remember seeing the contract, but...
for a couple of days. And then there's a question about releasing of information. This
right,
makes,
so,
I mean, it's...
All right.
Look.
I know, no, I'm just saying...
Hundreds of millions of dollars in tax exemptions on the line right here. And when I watch these kinds of things happening,
I got it.
It's disgusting.
I got it, and I share your frustration, and you know that. But that's it. I've got Lynn. All right, Kathy.
It's hard to have a conversation where we come to one mind when there are so many things that get thrown out and mm-hmm. we were discussing linearly. But it was the IDA that rejected the contract. And you know, I accept that a last-minute change is a valid reason to throw out a contract. I do. I just think that at that point, there are options of, you know, what could have been done to make it acceptable. And now we have the fallout of a decision that, at least as, you know, as I look at it from the outside, which it is necessarily, leaves the county with the need to provide services from entities that will either provide them at a much higher cost or have, you know, benefit from having access to our information that I would rather that they're not have. Now, there may be better options that come down the road, and you can buy a domain and hosting for $4 a month, $36. Go on the internet. I can name a half a dozen companies that will give that to you. So at the time when you no longer had Ulster County doing this for you, I would have thought that the board would have said, we've got to get our information under our own control, and bought a $36 per year website and had the county transfer all that information. Okay, that didn't happen. That's fine. You know, you are volunteers. But I think being volunteers, the idea that of, you know, setting terms for the county in ways that apparently the county didn't want to go that direction anymore, led to a breach. And I just think that we are heading down a path that seems like it gets worse and worse as we go, in my mind's eye. And I'd like to look back to where we could change. You know, if we could have changed there, would it have been better? If that's the case, then we should consider those changes now.
All right, so hold on, because I want to give you 1 second. I apologize, because I don't want this to continue on going on much longer. Quite candidly, we are very much approaching the witching hour. But to the chair of the IDA, at any point did either you or council approach the county about renegotiation after the sort of fallout after the contract?
We sent them a letter indicating that the 30-day clause was important to the IDA, that it had been in every single contract that the IDA had had with the county for over 10 years.
But did you guys ever offer to renegotiate or to actually just to come back to the table or to discuss? Either you or your counsel.
What was the date Joe sent the memo that they had a response?
Oh, it was
before Christmas.
It was way before Christmas, but their deadline was on the 26th to let us know by the 26th of December.
To let us know what?
So if they were going to, that was the sticking point, the 30-day clause. So they were sent a note to add that back into the contract, and we could discuss, and they didn't.
Listen, I don't like speaking with the presses here, okay?
Why not?
You know, I don't like it.
Well, I do.
I never liked it in 30 years of being in construction. I still don't like it, okay? With that being said, you know, basically what happened here is, you know, you had a renewal of a contract. Boom. Okay? There was no renegotiation of a contract. Renegotiation of a contract brings to light if you want to add or delete something in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it happened. Okay, do I kind of agree with Kathy? It's a speed bump. Okay, something comes back. It shouldn't have came back after the fact, but it came back. Now, we could have sat down, we could have talked it through. Joe did send a letter out asking,
Joe,
my understanding, as a board member. And
Joe Scott, sorry, making sure.
And that's what it was.
Is he an attorney for any other IDAs?
Joe, yeah, I believe he is.
He's returned for a lot of other ideas.
So Mike,
just make sure I'm clear. So Joe Scott did send a memo to basically to the administration with regards to this to kind of go and.
I was CC'd.
I'm looking for it now.
Okay, so apparently they did reach out with regards to trying to go and renegotiate. I didn't know that.
Put the 30 days back in and we'll talk.
I understand that, but it didn't happen.
If I may.
Go ahead.
Nobody goes into a contract negotiation or renewal of services, Legislator Nolan, I just can't believe that anybody with a legal background would go into a, and I'm not saying you, I mean our head of economic development has a legal background, with a contract that's crossed out at the 11th hour when the contract and services are being signed. So to put the onus, just to say, just to put the onus on the IDA for, you know, I think it's disingenuous. The reality is there are issues, and not all, and, you know, one side of a story gets played out in the press, and everybody, and our role as legislator is to understand that there's multiple sides mm-hmm. to a story. And in this case, there are, and it's disappointing that we're at this level. But as economic development members, I'm hoping we can bridge a gap, at least for a short-term space, because for me, the note on the website says it all. It is anybody who goes there, it doesn't. We don't look good as a county. We don't look mm-hmm. good, and so I think our goal should be, you know, okay, we got some background, and it was not the way we'd wanted to have happened. But I don't think you could put the onus all on one side, and I do think that there's a better way of representing the people of this community in a professional manner that, while there may have been differences, allows us to get people moving in the right direction instead of keep going back on this, and give fodder to the news story of the day, which only prints part of the story. And to me, that's my biggest concern. If we're going to be transparent, let's be transparent across the board. Let's try to work this out, and let's figure out a professional way of trying to remedy some of these things, which really are unconscionable and are not the greatest for the people of this county, which we're all here to serve. So yep. With that...
No. And I it was very well said. And actually, I'm going to also just offer at this point, considering the lateness of the hour, I'm going to offer to the chair, I don't know if in either March or April you'd like to come back and maybe update us at that point. Number one, the RFP will have hopefully gone out and been responded to. And then secondly, you may then want to update us on where things are at with the uniform tax exempt policy.
Yes.
All right.
I can
maybe March, April, whatever. You let me know when you're.
I can tell you that I've talked to the chair, Paul Andreessen, about going out and looking and doing a study on what the UTEP is from Albany all the way down to Westchester, so that we can see what everybody else is doing and see
sure.
how ours compares, and then take the best practices from what we get and try and come up with something that is
serves Ulster.
You know, I know that, you know, Rick, the finance guy here, I mean, we look at the thing, and it's 100%, 100%, 100%, 75, 75, 75, and then 50, 50, 50, and it's
mind,
weird.
100 gets divided by 10. it equals, should be divided in equal amounts, 100, 90, 80, 70, not what is currently. But that's besides the point. We're going to fix that. May I have one final say? Or maybe it's not a final say. I certainly accept every all the suggestions, so on and so forth. Next time we have a problem with the website, we'll come to you to get our new website up and running. But I do want to use the right words, but I want to be very blunt. The lion's share of the work is falling on these two people.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, and Paul, and a number of other people. We're volunteers.
Yes, you are.
I don't want smoke blown up on you know what, that we should have done this, that, or the other thing. We did everything perfectly professional. That's not the case for the other side. On the finance side, for example, I couldn't even get an answer as to how the finances were put together. I was finally able to determine with the help of an outside auditor that we're paying, that they were put together by scrambling together Excel spreadsheets and linking those spreadsheets, as opposed to using something a little bit more modern, like QuickBooks. So we are going to have to use an outside accounting firm to put together the financials until we can hire somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I don't understand Excel spreadsheets, but give me a break. Our financials are in great shape, but I couldn't even get a question answered for a month as to how are these things constructed. We continue to have the same problem with getting answers to some of the more detailed questions of an administrative type.
I give it up. We'll figure it out ourselves.
Well, actually, if I may, by the way, from now on, if you're not getting responses from the administration, please let me know, and I will work with Chair Bartels to get those answers from the administration, because it's not acceptable that they're not communicating with you. This whole system where you're convolutedly going from Joe and from Joe to this person and then this person to another person is a bizarre game of telephone that I have never heard of in government ever. So, and I've been in government on and off for about 20 years. So
this is what's been happening. Our intent, the chair, myself, and the other two members that are here, is to get this thing fixed. We've lost, or will have lost, 3 or 4 months in making this run a lot better. For example, the UTIP and a host of other things.
Sure, sure.
Proper closing procedures or proper disclosures to the candidates for the pilot who come to us and want to know what this is going to cost us. What are our options? All those things that could have been worked on, we're now futzing around with financials and with administrative details. I'm not even entirely sure that we do have all the records, and neither is the chair for a variety of different reasons. But we're going to determine that. And as I said,
we're making it work, though.
No, no, I understand that. You know, look, going forward, I don't anticipate having a meeting with the airing, you know, this way. I'm imagining next month or the following month, whenever you guys are coming back to us, we'll be able to kind of talk more about the policy pieces without this. But we couldn't very well go through this meeting without addressing head-on these issues that have been floating around out there and reported on, because quite candidly, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of... And I'm actually just disappointed because I know you guys are really... trying. I mean, I each of you personally has been very thoughtful in trying to figure out the best way forward, both in terms of not just this situation, but also even just in terms of what, you know, what kinds of projects that we should be looking for, and how, you know, I want to commend all of the board in terms of this whole concept of doing pre-screenings, in which you're actually beginning to actually, you know, understand the project, so that way it's not coming on your desk the last minute. It's actually something that we've been struggling with in the legislature, where we've had sort of resolutions brought to us without proper information in advance, and it's been frustrating. And I know you guys were sort of going through some of those frustrations where you had projects almost sort of being dumped on you without a lot of information, without a lot of backup, and suddenly, you know, being forced to go and deal with million-dollar decisions, and you guys are volunteers, right? So, I mean, I empathize.
Background checks, the whole, yeah.
No, I know, and in fact, and there were some projects that, quite candidly, probably shouldn't have been brought to your attention, because upon doing the due diligence, you begin to kind of discover, oh, that's not really good, right? You know, and so thankfully, by doing that due diligence, you're sort of at least cleaning up some of that process, and that's to be commended. So, on that note, we are reaching the witching hour of 2 hours. It is 7:53. Before we leave, I want to make sure I just give you a handout. Please just take one of each. Here, hold on, I'll pull out a couple. This is just with regards to Ellenville Million. This is just an update. Hold on. I got one for you, too. Don't worry.
I'll hand them out.
Okay, fine. You hand them out.
I have one.
Was this yours?
No. Is it? Oh, well, that's probably mine. Forget it. Fine. You already have one.
Okay. I got one already.
So just so the committee is aware, according to the EDA, Ellenville Million uncommitted funds as of 1/29/19, according to what they presented, is $146,636. Problem is, though, $39,000 is actually sort of earmarked. It's not officially earmarked, but it's actually earmarked, and that's with regard to the Wi-Fi project. So that way, it's really more of like a bit over $100,000. In actuality, so, all right, guys, I'm calling the cops. Watch out. So, on that note, I want to make sure that this committee is at least just updated that there might be some suggestions by OED with regards to another reallocation. I did share with Suzanne and said, well, you know, we've already done this once where we reallocated money. There were some questions and concerns at that time with regards to how that was being done. So if we are in fact being asked again to reallocate money, let's really make sure it's the last time and that whatever we are spending money on is in fact going to be worthwhile for the community of Ellenville. So let's just keep that in mind. I'm going to be reaching out to...
Which means we'll be getting a resolution on that, right?
Well, they didn't want to present unless there was a sense from the group, from the committee, and I had to kind of go and say, well, we can't exactly go and respond in a, you know... To a hypothetical, and so far I'm probably going to be reaching out to the mayor and the supervisor and to Legislator Collins to at least sort of find out where their heads are at, what their ideas are, so that way whatever we ultimately reallocate these dollars for is in fact community driven, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of those things that I want to make sure that we're keeping an eye on, right? Because out of this $146,636, we already know $39,000 actually goes towards the broadband project, which is technically actually the Wi-Fi project, but let's not go there. But that basically would still leave you over $100,000 and how that is to be allocated. So that's part of my sort of homework assignment as chair, is to kind of go and have those conversations. All right? Okay. Okay, very good. Next, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Legislator Archer and seconded by Legislator Maloney. All right. Thank you so much.